Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, another show dealing with the concept of why life is, of course, but beyond that, I thought we'd deal with some of the elements of the experiment, I'll call it that, that was done hundreds of years ago here in the United States to try to improve the quality of life as it relates to its own creator or God. And this is something that I think a lot of people may not understand, particularly if they don't live here in this country. And I know many listeners to the show actually live elsewhere. But it is a true experiment in attempting to raise the consciousness, which is the ability to bring together all the elements of understanding, both what life is and what God is, and how those blend together so that they support each other enough so that a government and a people living together under that government can exist in a way which was, at that time, and still maybe today, a unique formula for producing the ripe environment for there to be a growth in, we'll call it, the spiritual and God consciousness of people and a way of life that improves that element. Now, tonight's show, I named it, I think appropriately, in defense of individual, an important word here, liberty, life, and property. Now, you might say, well, that sounds so trite. I mean, you know, we're talking about God, and now it's about individual liberty, life, and property. How come that's so important, particularly with the last thing being property? I mean, does God really care about property? But when I define these terms, which is right now, basically, and as we develop what this really is supposed to be, I think that it will make a lot more sense. There are so many elements to that simple, we'll call it title of tonight's show, that it may, by the time we're done, bring a whole different level of understanding.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's hidden meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back. Yes, that was pretty quick. What happened there was this is a live show, of course, and sometimes there are technical difficulties because I'm speaking from a studio which is actually 1,000 miles away from the engineering staff that are trying to produce the show.
So your volume is a bit too low, though, now.
All right, turn it up a bit. All right, I just raised my volume. I just heard that from our engineer. So I'm speaking from a studio which is actually 1,000 miles away. So sometimes the connection, the handshake between my equipment and their equipment just doesn't fit. And it could be on my side, it could be in between us. It's so hard to know what's really happening. And to do it in real time, it's almost impossible. So we start over and just try to see if we can get it right. And hopefully we're doing that right now. There might have been some noise on the line that you've even heard at the beginning. Again, in defense of individual liberty, life, and property is a larger concept than what the words may mean to many people. And so I think the first thing is to talk about what I mean by in defense. When you defend something, you protect it from harm, from there being a diminution in what it is that you're attempting to defend. You're also trying to preserve some element of a concept, truth, and in many cases, it's a part of the relationship of what comes after that you're trying to defend. So a single defense of one thing is not necessarily the defense of a relationship, but the defense of individual liberty, life, and property is a whole relationship. And so it's bigger than just defense of individuals, defense of liberty, defense of life, or defense of property. It's the relationship of them that really becomes the key to understanding the entire element. Now, some of what I'm telling you is written in some books that were put together by a group of the founders of this country, the United States, to memorialize their thinking about what they were trying to do, trying to accomplish in creating the United States, and particularly the Constitution of the United States, which came after the beginning of creation of the United States, and we'll call it a federal government rather than a confederacy. I realize many people think of that in terms of the Civil War, but the first confederacy actually existed prior to the Constitution and prior to the development of the, we'll call it, the federal government. And so it's a kind of strange relationship because the federal system is designed to have a check and balance to prevent it from overpowering the rights of individuals or states. I'm, again, quoting from some of the Federalist ideas. And also, it's there to provide protections and service and help to the quality of life and the meaning of existence as a country, quality of country, we'll call it, so that there's a higher level of protection of people as a unit, as a country, and a higher level of protection of the rights of people from even, we'll call it, the states. So it's a kind of strange relationship because the federal government is designed to protect people from states, but then it's also the Constitution is there to protect the states from intrusion by the federal government. So there's a constant, we'll say, tug of war going on. And the whole thing is contingent upon the defense of individualism defended is the existence and rights of individuals. Now, how do we know that? Well, after the original Constitution was drawn up, a couple of the famous founders stated that it was weak on defending the rights of individuals, and a number of states would not ratify it unless that was done, so they added something called the amendments. The amendments have issues included in them that are about things of like, well, do states have rights, and in what way are they in relationship to those of individuals and the government? But it's all set in the tenor of the rights of individuals first. Now, why is that so important? You know, why should we consider that really the most single first element in this question of defense? Because if you have defense where the individual is not the first element of concern, you can be say everything that almost exists in the Constitution, and it be for the cause and sake of the government and of evil. It's so strange. Just taking out a single part of this whole concept, this whole huge concept, leaves it open to being attacked and controlled by evil. As a matter of fact, the word communism, which is a community instead of individualism, a community of interest rather than an individual of interest for rights, so the rights of the community supersede the rights of the individual. That's what communism means. Then you have effectively challenged and reduced all the other elements of the government to a, we'll call it, system of defense that is against individual people. And that is what promotes evil, because evil seeks to subject and enslave the individual for its own good, we'll call it that, its own bad, maybe, and that is to gain power from others that it uses for its own life at the cost, usually, of others. And that has a terrible outcome. Now, communism may not in itself be like extolling evil, but it's one of the most convenient forms of government to extol and be used by evil because it does away with.
Everyone, since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Okay, we are trying hard to make this work. The station is hearing a lot of popping and crackling. Some people are reporting that they're hearing me normal. So it's questionable what's happening. But we're going to continue doing this and see if anyone hears the same noises that the engineer is hearing. I've just got a thumbs up on my end that it's okay. But I will continue speaking if it's causing problems for people. Of course, we don't want to make it so nobody can hear me. But I will continue. So I will continue on with this concept of defense of individual liberty, life, and property. So the idea of individual is key because it is pertinent to the concept of God. I want to explain this from a very, we'll call it, spiritual side. If you look at what the explanation of why life is, which is what the show is about, in terms of God's creation, life exists as an extension and because God wishes, decides, to create a thing, we call it life, that in its own right can become a participant on an individual level of consciousness with its creator. There's only one part of life that humans are familiar with that can do this, and that's human beings themselves. Everything that exists beyond human can do it as well. But all life below human only has a piece of it, doesn't have enough to be totally, we'll say, individual. It doesn't have what we call a self that's fully developed, at least. And because of that, it can't recognize its own creator. So you don't see even advanced animals building churches and praying to God and having a love of God. They may love each other, they may love even humans, but they don't love God because they don't conceive of what God is, because their level of individual self is not great enough to individually identify themselves as a part of and doing something co-creative with God. So these are the things that make individual so important. If you snatch individuality out of the process, it's like going backwards in a kind of evolutionary sense, although I use the word evolutionary in a different way than what most people might. And when you go back to those other levels, you become a victim of the court, the wills of many other sources, because until you see yourself co-participating with what God is, which is virtue and the ability to create freedom for other things so they can do the same for even more, then you've got a system where humans become slaves. Slaves not because they say, well, gee, I feel like being a slave today. Slaves because they have no longer enough visibleness, enough understanding, consciousness of their own creator to do anything other than that. That's the problem. So you go back to being like, well, maybe a nice, friendly puppy dog. But that allows you to become victimized by, we'll call it the darker side of humanity. And that's enslavement. It's not like slaves are produced as much as they are. They create themselves by losing perspective of this bigger part of what it means to have true individual self. People that don't lose that can't be enslaved. They can be killed. They can be tortured. But they can't be enslaved. Enslavement has to do with the concept of freedom and will. Will comes from the consistency of choices. So people people who are slaves don't exercise the level of choices that they could, but they choose not to. All right, so ultimately, individualness is a very, very important element. And the strange thing about this, maybe, is that a good number of the people who helped to create the federal government saw that as an important element. Not immediately. It's interesting, right? Initially, the majority of them, and that's the reason they call it the Federalist Papers, the majority of them were so keen on trying to make a federal government, they actually lost sight of it. And they took a lot of others, states and people and others, that reminded the founders of this principle that caused the creation of the amendments to the Constitution, which brought the individual more in clear focus. It's kind of an interesting thing that you can lose sight of this when you don't realize the level to which the power of a federal government in a country the size and whatever of the United States, of course, it was much smaller in its totalness at those times than now, but they kind of saw it, they didn't see it growing to the point where it has now, and that maybe was why they didn't realize how much of a big deal this would become. But many people did understand it because they came from other lands, other countries, where this whole idea was missing or in many ways abused. And without the individual, it's pretty hard to keep the remaining three things I talked about, liberty, life, and property. Now, why is liberty more important than life? Well, one of the founders, Patrick Henry, said it, give me liberty or give me death. Because without liberty, life loses the meaning that is so important. And part of that meaning, a major part, is the co-creation with one's creator, the ability to be creative in an enlightened way. That means one's creator of virtue. And so from that perspective, that's obviously, therefore, a more important factor than even life itself. That doesn't mean that give me liberty and I want to die. It means give me liberty or life takes on a meaningless existence. And so that's where liberty is so critical. Liberty is the first part of God's own mind. Liberty is what God said life has to have in order to become a co-creator of virtue in form or light in form and create a better world, make this planet a sacred part of existence. It's a little bit far away from that even today, but the point is this is an experiment. It's not meant to be the completion of the process. It's really more or less the beginning. Now, I'm going to talk later in this show of some of the problems, some of the problems we're having today in the modern existence. But right now, we're still in the historical side of things, we'll say. All right, so let me continue on. What does it mean that individual liberty, okay, is the individual's ability to be creative with its own creator and with others who choose to do the same, and they don't have to necessarily agree on anything other than that they agree that everybody should have liberty to do it. So it's kind of a very, we'll say, circular thing because it all revolves around the idea of liberty. And then the next idea of defense of individuality has to do with life. If you defend that life in order to grow needs to have as much individuality to it as the responsibility of the life itself can handle, as totally as much as it is possible for it to have, then you say that's the area where life has criticalness. Now, that's a very hard thing for some people to understand because I'm not saying that the life of bacteria or viruses or molds has the same level of individual liberty to it that the life of a human being does. That's a very strange thing, but it's obviously a true statement. And the reason for this is that the responsibility that bacteria take for all of life is so very small that that's the highest level of liberty that can be given to it. So we don't have too much of a concern for, we'll say, ending the life of some bacteria or molds and things. We do it all the time, and as a matter of fact, we eat things sometimes. We're doing that, too. Where this gets murky is when you get to higher levels of plant and especially animal life, and there has been where the whole concept has taken on a different different meaning, because some plants and animals have an intertwining responsibility to the life of many other things, even though they seemingly don't have very high sense of self or responsibility in terms of consciousness or understanding. But even though they don't understand, they play a role which is critical. And this is where some of the conservationists come into play. They see this and they say, well, that part of life is very important because it supports all of these other things, even if it itself doesn't have much consciousness about it. And that's an understandable thing because they are still responsible. They are still responsible, even if they're not conscious of it, for supporting many other parts of life. And if we took them out of the picture, the whole system could be seriously upset and damaged. So that's the reason I use this concern about being responsible for the life, even though the responsibility isn't necessarily with understanding. But at the same time, you can go too far with this. You can attribute the quality of responsibility to parts of life that only marginally, around the edges, affect most of other life. I mean, let's put it like this. Let's say that I say the spotted owl is related to 50 other insects and 25 other types of plants, etc., in the way they interact. But their support of that life as being responsible for that life's own growth is somewhat minimal and could be replaced by many other forms of life. Well, the spotted owl does contribute to it. Then you have to ask yourself, well, can I make the spotted owl responsible for life to the level where it detracts from the growth of many other kinds of life, especially human life? And the answer probably doesn't come in the favor of the conservationists in that situation. So you have a kind of problem built into the system of thought that is exaggerated by those who want to collectivize responsibility too far away from individuality. So again, here's the rub. Even though life is extremely important because we're defending it, and the individual nature of life we're defending, that individual nature cannot be collectively applied in responsibility to everything else. Even though you could say there is some vague connection, to attribute it to everything else is a serious problem that actually oddly becomes tyrannical. I.e., or E.G. maybe, the EPA. And this is, and beyond the EPA, you get into many of the laws to protect the quote-unquote environment, which is actually a signal path for those who want to have things remain exactly as they are without change and without interruption. And to the exclusion of the rights of human beings, et cetera. So there's a balance. There is a balance, and the balance is not easy to understand, and therefore a person and groups of people have become misaligned against the better interests of both lower forms of life and humans as well for the sake of a single form of life that has limited responsibility for the life. Now, does that mean that we have the right to wantonly go out and destroy, you know, whole species? Probably not. It means that we have the responsibility to see the level of responsibility that that species has and to ensure that it can survive in some way, but not at the cost of major other things, especially civilization of humans, on a larger scale. So there's a balance, and that's where sometimes this has not been applied properly. And it has to do with people thinking too much in terms of the collective whole of a species versus the individual liberties of humans. So I'll give you a concrete example of this, because everything I said was very conceptual just now. You know, and it's enough to almost drive you loony, okay? And so let me go through this. Let's say somebody owns a couple hundred acres of land. That's their property, and we're going to get to property next, but that's their property, okay? And they individually own the property. And on their individual property, there is a couple spotted owls that hang out, okay? And they need to use their property for many different things, some of them benefit all of humanity in a lot of significant ways. But to do these things, they're going to disturb the habitat of a couple of spotted owls that have been living there. And they probably lived there before these folks even owned the property. According to some of the guidelines, the spotted owl might have more rights to the property than the humans do in a number of the creative uses that the humans want to do on the property, which actually are good for a lot of other species and for humans themselves, including these humans. Their individual rights are being significantly interfered with because a species is, a member of a species, is endangered by someone else's belief structure, and a couple of them might be removed or changed in some way. And this isn't good. Now, the obvious answer is to take spotted owls and put them in places where they don't pretty much disturb anybody. But, of course, the arguments have been, well, if you do that, they may not survive because they're used to a certain environment, and you put them in some places a little bit different. Yeah, but the point here is you're getting into the question of collectivism versus individuality. And the individuality should come first, and the higher level of understanding that humans have should be considered more treasured than the level that the spotted owl has. But we're not trying to get rid of the spotted owl, and we definitely don't want to endanger its complete existence. But there are mitigating circumstances that need to be put into play, which are not part of the laws that affect them. So for some people, they obviously get upset because innately they realize that their individual liberties are being tremendously affected because of a secondary right of a creature who has far less importance but still should have the right to exist overall. The right to exist should be protected, but the right to interfere under concepts that does away with individual rights of people should not be infringed. And we can do both. It's not impossible. It's just that you don't write laws that ignore it. And you don't have a government that changes the equation that was originally designed by the founders of our country. And that really is part of the relationship of human beings to their creator. That's the bottom line. And if you go in the wrong direction, you lead to tyranny and a kind of evil. It may not be evil right away, but eventually it can be used by evil as a means of enslaving people, particularly if you get a government that's corrupt and evil. It will use these kinds of laws against people because it's a natural form They can do away with individual rights by just saying that spotted owls have to be protected no matter what. In any place they can find a spotted owl or an owl or any number of a thousand other kinds of things, they can take away the right to property and somewhat the right to liberty and life of humans. Strange stuff. Right. Okay. Now let's move on. So we kind of get the idea about what life is. Life is part of this connection with our own creator. It's very important for us to see that, for us to cherish life, even the life of spotted owls, but not to the point where we destroy the individual liberties of people or that of other creatures. Because all parts of life have some importance, and we see them within the level of responsibility for supporting other life. Not in your own personal interest, but in that responsibility. Okay, finally we get to the question of property. Now, a lot of people think, well, property is so trite. How does that relate to God? I mean, God isn't a materialistic thing. Is God that? Property is a good explanation for what I call the energy principle or intelligent interactions among people. People have the right to property because property is the energy that they control by ownership and by the ability to use it for their own individual purposes. And if you eliminate property on an individual level, then you have significantly damaged the ability for a person to have purposeful life, and you're back to that communism idea that property is everybody's, and you don't have an individual right to do what you want with it. Well, once you get into that kind of thinking and that kind of functioning, the whole system kind of falls apart and becomes nothing more than a charade of what would be a, we'll call it a virtuous system. It no longer is virtuous. It becomes, you probably heard this before, but it becomes something that is a fake kind of love or givingness in which you call it question of justice, a just system, because everybody owns your stuff and everybody can tell you what to do with your stuff, and especially the government. And this includes things that the government forces you to have or own or not be able to have or own. And so eventually the tyranny that comes from this property is so extreme that it can snuff out both life and liberty and the individual. And communism is the most effective way of doing this as a form of government, because it talks about social justice. What is social justice? Social justice means that other people have the right to control how much you have of any material thing, including money, property, or even activities, the exchange of energies. So once you have that going on, you can just about kiss all of the defenses to individual liberty, life, and property gone. And you are living in a totally tyrannical, controlled, and enslaving environment. At the present time, here in this country, the United States, we're moving rapidly in this direction. This is a terrible, terrible thing, because it means that our government is corrupt and moving towards darkness, evil. And people seem to be unaware of these things, even though they have been talked about. And we've seen other countries experiment with it and fail and destroy themselves because it is such an affront to God. The thing that we should also be aware of is that this social justice model, the communistic model, socialism, which is the in-between kind of place, all of these things have in them the seeds of atheistic ideation. It's supported by the idea that God doesn't exist. Strangely, evil promotes God doesn't exist, but because it wants to destroy God, which very contradictory. It knows God exists, but it wants to destroy God, which is the growth of life, so it could be God. It's a weird thing, but it convinces other people that God doesn't exist, because that is how it wins the game. So you can measure the amount of darkness in a system, call it a political system or a country, by how many people are atheists. As that grows, the country becomes darker. Now, does that mean that atheistic people are all dark? No. They're just on a path that will lead to that, should they stay there. But the problem is that if you get a large number of people on that path, the whole government and the social system and civilization in that area of the world goes dark. And if it happens internationally through many, many countries, then the world itself fails. It becomes a dark world. They don't exist very long, but they significantly damage the growth of life, which is what God is about. God wants life to grow. Damaging a whole world, a whole planet, is a very bad way of going about it. Okay, so you're looking at it from all these angles and trying to, we'll say, put together a system that makes sense. The founders of this country decided that they were going to challenge, we'll say, the prior conceptions of how a country and a government are supposed to interact with people. And the prior ways usually said that the government was controlled by those who had absolute power and had the only connection with God, direct connection with God. And the people were just serfs, servants, whatever. And there were different levels of that connection with the leaders, but so you had a kind of pecking order. There were lords and princes and this and that. But ultimately, you had the government founded at in a way with a strong person controlling things, and everything kind of went from there down. And that's how evil is structured, by the way. We'll get to that later. But so this was the past. The past was that all other attempts at self-government, where the people gave a temporary a year or two or 3 or 4 years most a right to someone to have some power in government. The government was always based upon the whim and right of the people, and regardless of anything else, the people were the source of power, and the people were the ones that were connected to God, not the ruler. Well, the ruler was supposed to be hopefully connected as well, but they were the ones connected to God. Their power flowed from God, and their power to create a government came through them, and they could change or destroy or do whatever they wanted with that government at their decisions, upon their decisions, on an annual to biannual basis, up to as much as 6 or 4 years, depending upon the nature of the person or people that they were elected. So this made a lot of sense because it gave to the people the power to disenfranchise the government. Sounds good, right? Well, it does until you deal with the question of corruption. Now, before I go on, I want to mention, we ran a couple times because we got knocked off the air, some commercials. I'm not going to go back and replay those commercials right now, so I want the engineer who's probably sitting there saying, oh, we haven't played the commercial. Nah, it's been played. We've done that. Been there, done that. I don't think we have to now. They've heard it a few times, and that's fine. I'm going to do another commercial live here at 7:30 my time, which is... We're back. Yes, we still are having many technical problems. And I'm going to tell you right now that if we can, we'll continue. But if we keep losing the signal, and what's happening is I'm being disconnected between here and 1,000 miles away. So that is why we're having such big problems. There's the other side of it is there's a lot of noise, which is indicative of the nature of the problem. So there's something not working properly. There's a way to correct it, but not, unfortunately, during the time I'm on the air right now. So we will work on it, but do the best we can. All right, back to what I was saying, that we're not going to any more commercials because we've gone through a lot of them, we keep doing. And I'm going to do one at 7:30, which will be a live commercial. But at any rate, so let me try to get this whole concept out to you folks. The idea of a defending individual liberty, life, and property became the foundation, eventually, of what it meant to have a free economy, a free life, and the ability to make the kinds of choices that makes life meaningful. And so that is where the eventual founders found themselves. And they concluded that it was only with that, we'll say, basic package of ideas that you could make a government that would most likely not become tyrannical, because in all the other governments that had tried even democracy and republics, they had failed because the government eventually, and not too long after the founding of the country, became tyrannical. Not too long meaning somewhere between decades to a couple hundred years. And that's unfortunate, because with that kind of history, they didn't give a lot of hope to us, because they said, well, if you can end up keeping it, we hope you will, and if you can't, it's a good try. And that's where we are kind of today. Now, does this mean that we have completely failed? I don't think so. I think that what we're doing now is we're being tried. Like a test. Will we permit a corrupt government to eventually become fully tyrannical? And the answer we'll know in a couple of years, because that's where we're at. We're at, right at that point right now. And about half of the country, in terms of population, seems to be with it. They understand that this is what's going on at some level. Not at the level that I just defined, but they have some, maybe just a partial understanding of it. The other half of the country has none. And that's where our real conflict is. We're almost split right down the middle. Some people have no consciousness, no understanding, you can substitute the words for it, about this issue, and would be quite content if the country had a tyrannical system and there was no individual property, life, or liberty for people. It just wouldn't bother them. They want what the promise to them is of a communistic social justice system in which they get something for nothing or something for much less than what they put in. And the reason for this is that they have not been successful within the present system because they don't know how or have failed in trying to be individuals in liberty, life, and property. This is a shame. And part of the reason is because of our educational system. It doesn't teach people how to do it. Part of the problem is our family structure system. Families have lost their way in developing it within themselves. And part of it is within the socioeconomic system in the ways that has, we'll say, been promoted by people who sometimes do ill to promotion. They promote the wrong things in the wrong ways. That really gets into the question of there being propaganda and people are being sold or promoted in ill fashion. This is such a problem that we are probably going to have a crisis from it. Now, the crisis that I'm talking about is not that some senator or some congressman gets on television and says how evil the government is. The crisis is going to be when, if you're familiar with Ayn Rand, she was a writer of somewhat fiction, although it's very prophetic because some of the stuff she wrote is coming true today. But the problem is more that the folks who want social justice are going to take over. It's that the people who normally defend their individual liberty, life, and property will quit being part of the system. Now, that sounds strange. Well, how do you quit being part of the system? Well, you can go off and isolate yourself from it. You can remove yourself from the country you're living in that's doing it. And you can also refuse to allow others to gain from your own individual liberty, life, and property. That's odd. Sometimes you have to destroy all three, which means you may end your life, but you refuse to let others trample on it. And there's a whole bunch of ways to do that, all the way from armed militarism to, strangely, complete absence. That's what happened in the Ayn Rand version. Nobody fought back. Nobody did anything. They just left, at least in will and mind, and sometimes even physically. So there was no more contributions, so you couldn't be taken from because there was nothing to take. And that causes almost immediate disruption, and within 6 months to a year, the government usually fails. Now, why would the government fail if all of the people who are the creators just decide to stop creating? And the reason for it is that the government doesn't make anything, doesn't create anything. It just steals when it's tyrannical. And so no production takes place. Everybody starts starving to death. There's no way to interact because all transportation stops. There's no way to communicate because all that stops. And everything crumbles. I know this sounds strange, but it could happen. You should read. Well, you can see two parts of the three parts of the book, but you can read the whole book, Atlas Shrugged. And this is what happens in that particular book. And it follows from the concept of communism and social justice. So it really is a very interesting way of seeing that there is still a defense, but the defense is that of losing rather than winning. You lose, you give up that which is being taken so that those that are surviving because they're surviving on the backs of those that are the creators just stop creating and then everybody fails. And the government fails even faster because the anger becomes against the government and eventually those that were taking start saying, well, I can't get anything, so I'm not going to support this anymore. It's a strange thing, isn't it? All right, so in defense of individual liberty, life, and property is a big deal. It really determines the success or failure of this particular country, the United States of America, and a number of others as well. And it's a great lesson for all of us, one way or another. Now, do I say that absolutely we're doomed for failure? No. No, I think that the trial can come out the following way. There's a solution to this whole situation, which doesn't have to be the Iron Man solution. I hope not, but it could go that way, so I have to include it. The better solution is the following. The exposure of and the complete revelation of evil and the corruption that supports it is the best way to prevent the tyranny, the best way, the best outcome. It requires that those who still have the ability this year, the next 12 months or so, 12 to 18 months, do what their diligence is supposed to be to reveal and to, we'll say, force out, using lawful means, the corruption. If this is done But it requires, unfortunately, the participation usually of the fourth estate, which is the press. If this is done, the results could be a turnaround. New people will be elected to Congress that will reverse most of the damage that has taken place. The administration that presently is in office will become impotent to continue in the tyrannical methods. People won't be attacked by the IRS or whoever. I mean, this is craziness, isn't it? But that sort of thing has at least a chance of succeeding, provided that the people who are at least somewhat non-corrupt are willing to stand up. If they're not, then I think we're headed for a much more severe correction. And the correction could mean the toppling of the entire country. Okay, we're back again, although this is going to be very short because we aren't able to maintain a consistency with our with the engineers and the rest of the station. So what we're going to do is we're going to end tonight. I will redo part of the show next week. And with that, hopefully you can pick it up then. And I apologize again for the technical difficulties. But again, this is live radio, and sometimes it just goes this way. We've had this happen a couple times in the past. We thought we corrected everything, but there is one weakness, I think, that we could still fix. So until next week, I'm going to sign off and say this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.